What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one, the only, still the trailblazing show that dares to talk about things like sci-fi, fantasy, movies, television, books, dragons, samurai, swords, horses, unicorns, spaceships, lasers, and time travel. My name is Dan Selke. I'm the editor of winterscoming.net. We talk about all those things, but in the written form. And I'm here with Daniel Roman, another editor of winterscoming.net, who also does those things. And hello, everybody yes. out there. Good to see you, Bubo Bubo. Good to see you, Nicole. Good to see you, Fantasy Fan, Martha, Robert, Julie. Great to see you. You came in a good day, but why? Daniel, why don't you fill them in what we're going to be talking about today?
Oh, man. It should be obvious from our episode title, if you looked at that on your way in. We are going to talk Shogun today, the FX series that just finished up its run yesterday. So we've got thoughts about Shogun. And also there's some news we need to discuss in Westeros this week.
Of course.
We're making up for last week where it was barren and dry as, I don't know, the fields and the Sworn Sword where they're having crop troubles. This week, we've got lots to talk about. But yeah, that's what we're going to get into. So should we dive right into Shogun? Do we need to discuss some things first, or how you feeling, Dan?
I think we should, but I do want to respond to Bubo Bubo, who I have trouble saying. I was going to call you B2. That's easier for my lips to form those words. Who asks whether we play rock, paper, scissors to determine who's going to be in left each podcast. And Bubo, I don't really know. Left, right. Why can't we all just get along, you know? But anyway, let's move on to talking about Shogun. This show that's been running for 10 episodes, 10 weeks, which, by the way, kind of nice to have that old fashioned, just an episode premieres 10 weeks ago, and then we have one every week until it's over. It does feel old fashioned at this point, but I like it because you get to kind of, and this show proved what a good selling tactic it is, because this, the audience of the show grew every week. The buzz grew every week. We got to see this kind of historical drama set in feudal Japan play out over Hulu and FX for 10 weeks, based on the 1975 novel Shogun by James Clavell. It ended up being very popular. It ended up being very watchable, very compelling. And Daniel, now that it's over, now that the series probably finale aired last night, I want to ask you the question. Did the series finale live up to the promise of this historical fiction drama? Why or why not show your work?
So in my opinion, absolutely. So Shogun, like you said, it's based on a 1975 book by James Clavell. I have not read the book. I'll put that out there right at the start.
No, I'm not a dork.
I haven't taken the time to read all 1,100 pages of it yet. But my understanding is that the show ends pretty much exactly the way the book ends, give or take a couple of things. I feel like the finale, I kind of anticipated it being a little more divisive than some of Shogun's other episodes because some spoilers here. So, spoiler alert for people who haven't watched or maybe haven't seen the finale. Shogun all season is talking about this war that's coming. It's set just before the Edo period in Japan, kind of at the end of the Warring States period of history. The entire show is about the lead up to this war. And then Shogun, the finale, doesn't really show it. There was a big historical battle that happens, but it happens after the events of the show. And my understanding, so Leo asked about this in the chat. So he said, what about that flash forward? So what I was about to say is we get a very brief glimpse in Torinaga, who's the main lord played by Hiroyuki Sanada, in his imagination. He imagines what will happen in the battle. So we see the battle lines drawn, and that's kind of a little bit of a flash forward. My understanding is the book has an epilogue that shows a little bit of what happens in the battle. So it's interesting because I thought that Shogun had like a very restrained, quiet finale. There's so much death in this show. So many people are committing seppuku or dying to natural disasters or in coups, that it was kind of refreshing that the finale slowed things way down and just like gave everybody time to grieve and figure out their lives and what they're doing next. And like, that's what it was about. I think that that worked really, really well for this show, and it was a really impactful ending because of that. Instead of just, feeling like they had to do a big battle because that's what you do at the end of these kinds of genre fiction shows. And I have seen that complaint, like the battle of, I think it's Sekigahara. I might be saying the name of the battle wrong, but that a lot of people wanted to see it, but it's an afterthought. It's just not the story that James Clavell was telling in the book. It's not really the story that the show is telling. It's telling about the people who moved events that then eventually led to that. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. Leo says, actually meant the old man Anjin flash forward. I'll just briefly touch on that and then I'll toss it back to you, Dan. That actually is my understanding is that that is not actually a flash forward. That is basically a vision of what he fears his life would be like if he were able to return to England, which we find out at the end of the show. He's probably not ever going to. The giveaway for that is that he's holding Mariko's cross in those flash forwards, those visions. They only show up when he's unconscious and right before he's about to do a specific deed, we'll say. So those are like flashes of his subconscious. It's not an actual flash forward, but they did kind of do sleight of hand with that. So yeah, that's my rant about Shogun. I really, really enjoyed it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dan, you've been watching, but you haven't seen all of it yet, right? So what do you think of it so far?
I love it. And I know that we have some people who aren't enjoying it like super duper in the comments. I know that Nicole says that loves the sets, costumes, kind of confusing, underwhelming on the whole. Fantasy fan watched the first episode, couldn't get over the subtitles, kind of hard to follow, but sees why it's appealing. And of course, I get that. I am 6 episodes deep in a 10-episode season, and I am loving it quite a bit. I like the quiet laid backness. I mean, it's kind of just when you have good characters, good story, good actors, good production values, it's okay to tell it in a pretty straightforward way. It's a pretty direct show, kind of meat and potatoes, good storytelling. I'm loving it. I also love the idea of a finale that kind of previews a huge battle and then decides not to make that the climax. I think we're so conditioned now, probably for like the past 20 years of filmmaking, and especially since Marvel took over everything, to expect a huge action scene to be the climax of everything. Like, a battle is what something climaxes with. I am trying, and I'm going to blame Marvel for it. I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, like, Avengers Endgame is the biggest, one of the biggest movies of all time. And it basically is leading up to this giant, huge fight. And that's what we expect. We expect special effects. We expect CGI armies. We expect folk flying through the air and battling each other. Even on Game of Thrones, couldn't really get away from it. Like, the big violent destruction of King's Landing was kind of the penultimate episode. And then you could, I can't believe I'm doing this again. I didn't mean to, I'm sorry. like Jon killing Daenerys, just for example, is this much more intimate moment. And it could have been a huge climax, but you shove it into like the first half of a finale episode as if it's not worthy of like a big finale by itself. I think that instinct, the expectation that a big exciting thing is what you build up to, is very ingrained in cinema, movies, TV, Hollywood in general. And for a show to eschew that because that's not the right way for the story is cool and subversive and different and exciting. And I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I'm looking forward to it. So kudos for Shogun for doing it their way. I don't like Frank Sinatra or Johnny Rotten. And for just knocking out of the park.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I was going to bring up Game of Thrones because I think we can draw, there's a pretty clear line, I think, to be drawn to like seasons 4 through the end of the series in terms of like establishing that trend of like, we need to have a big showstopper battle, because before that, Thrones didn't always have that. And after that, you know, they made up a few that aren't in the books, like Hardhome, so that they would have like basically almost one every season through the end of the run. And then we've seen other shows kind of take from that. So like The Witcher is another good example of this, where season 1, they have this battle with the, the name of the battle is escaping me, Sodden Hill. They show the battle of Sodden Hill with the sorceresses, with the Nilfgaardians. It is fun, but that's another pretty good example where in the book, Sapkowski very purposely doesn't show the Battle of Sodden Hill. Mm-hmm. He does exactly what you're talking about with Shogun, where he focuses on just Geralt and what Geralt goes through hearing this battle happen and then assuming Yennefer and all these people he knew had died in it. So the show kind of, you know, leaned into, well, we need to have a battle every season because that's what shows do. So it is, I what found it really refreshing that Shogun did the opposite and bucked that trend. And I'm seeing a lot of people in the chat saying, Julie says, not a huge fan of subtitles, but still enjoyed Shogun. I saw a few other people say that. And yeah, Shogun is a show that really does, like, you have to close watch it. It's not a very good multitasking show. Like, it's kind of interesting. There was a report that came out, I think, earlier this week about a Netflix exec basically giving notes back on some series they were considering, saying, dumb it down. You know, it needs to be more of second screen viewing.
David Chase.
Yeah, people need to be able to look away and look at their phone and whatever. And Shogun is not that kind of show, like, at all. They just were like, we're not going to talk down to the viewer. They put a lot of effort into translating the script into Japanese and then again into like period Japanese, like classical Japanese for this time period,
cool.
and then back into English for the subtitles. So there are all of these things where they really put a lot of effort into the script, into the design, into every aspect of the show. And yeah, I think it has really worked for them. I think it is definitely in the conversation as one of the best shows of the year so far.
Oh, yeah.
If not the past few years, because it is, I can understand some people maybe not loving it because it is a specific kind of like fairly dark show, fairly straightforward. It's not like reinventing the wheel, like you said. But it does everything it does so well, you know, right down to the costuming, like everything is just fantastic. So yeah, Shogun, is it the best show ever made? I don't know, but
in the history of the planet Earth, maybe
the history who's of the to planet say? Earth, it's definitely in the conversation, I think, for one of the best limited series that has been made, which is kind of awesome because, you know, this is not the first time Shogun has been adapted. There was, I want to say, an adaptation in the 80s?
1980.
And it's interesting because that one did some things really well, too. I watched some of it while the new one was going just to see what it was like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because that one didn't have subtitles because it was an older era of television where you probably couldn't get something like that made with that amount of subtitles.
Right.
So they kind of leaned into it as almost like a way of like othering, like showing how John Blackthorne couldn't understand what was going on around him because you, the viewer, didn't understand the Japanese, presumably. I think Booba Booba says 1980 show was good as well.
B2.
Really good. B squared agrees. There's some things about it that, you know, they're kind of artifacts of the time that it was made.
Sure.
But I was surprised at how many events and things like that lined up and how many things it does seem like both of these shows took from the book. Because, you know, James Clavell was alive when that one was made. He was like a consultant and stuff. Shogun, I think, has really, you know, made a case for itself. If Anna Sawai does not at least get nominated for an Emmy, I will riot in the streets because she was fantastic. And I will be rewatching this series. I think that's a nice thing about it being a limited series too. It's easy to justify the rewatch because you're just getting that whole story again in one chunk.
I do wish more folks went for a limited series and not just assuming you're going to make a giant show. Yeah, it's done a nice job of subverting expectations and showing that you can have a rich, popular, well-done show without assuming it's going to be part of a cinematic universe or with having a giant battle or anything like that. Although I do like the idea of them adapting other books in James Clavell's Asian saga.
Same.
I want to address a couple of comments out there because I know folk were talking about subtitles. And Julie, by the way, I'm mostly sarcastically saying that is Shogun the best show in the entire world? I mean, I think that's a silly question. You can't really, one can know that.
Of course.
It's not going to go anywhere anytime soon. I mean, subtitles, it's not like people haven't enjoyed watching subtitles just since the second screen revolution. Like,
sure,
folk have struggled with subtitles for a long time. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If folk are saying, like, I couldn't do the subtitles, I don't really enjoy subtitles, that's not abnormal to say. I do agree with Robert that there are a lot of great shows, movies out there that are foreign films have subtitles that you can get a lot out of if you're willing to go with it. But if someone doesn't like subtitles, I'm not going to get on their case about that. It does look like it's a good sign. Shogun's a good sign for a lot of reasons. Because folk were clearly willing to go through the subtitles and enjoy it anyway, which is a good kind of openness, like one floodgate potentially. Also, if Hollywood is looking, because they've long been struggling with this problem of how do we make like a new season of epic television every year without like yearly gaps and still fit in all these epic battles and all these huge special effects. Well, maybe you don't always have to all the time have that stuff. Like if you have the powerful drama, it can sell itself. And that could be one way out of that particular quagmire. But yeah, love the show. I'm glad it found a big audience. As Leo points out, Parasite won the first foreign film with subtitles to win a Best Picture Oscar. And it was amazing. Subtitles are good. And as Bubba says, in Ukraine, we have good alternative subtitles English, it's dubbed, or other language background, one voice translation. In this case, you understand they speak foreign language. Yeah, there's always been lots of ways around it.
Sure.
And I'm sure we'll keep experimenting with that as the world just grows closer together, as technology spreads its loving arms around the entire globe and hugs us tight.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, Shogun, it's interesting. Like, I wouldn't want to watch a dubbed version of Shogun, honestly. And like, granted, I'm biased because I don't mind subtitles, but it's just a slightly different viewing experience than being able to hear. It's just different. It's not better or worse. But one thing I like about Shogun is that language barriers is a whole point of the show.
True.
Like, these are not subtitles that are there just for the hell of it. Like, who understands what and how people are interpreting different language things. Like, that is like at the heart of this show. So this is an instance where it does feel like the subtitles are not only necessary, but they work so well. I think they're also some of the smoothest subtitles I've seen in a show, where they really really work very well in each scene. But they actually tone some of it down because, you know, Blackthorne is supposed to be speaking Portuguese for most of most of the series. And they made the Portuguese English so that to emphasize that language barrier theme rather than just having it be an entirely subtitled show, because the logistics of having people speaking Portuguese and Japanese on the set, I read an interview about this where they said it just kind of was untenable to be doing that. Especially for like Anna Sawai, who needed to be fluent in two languages to do her part. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's interesting that you say this kind of represents a way that streamers could get around that need for the big spectacle that is now making shows take 2 years. You know, Shogun is proving like maybe you can still have good shows without dropping, you know, tens of millions on these huge battles and stuff that are going to take multiple years to film. And I do think there's something to that, like, because Game of Thrones was so huge and the idea that like fantastical or medieval like spectacles are now a thing that viewers expect, that streamers mm-hmm. are like, people expect this, we need to have it. Just make good television. I feel like just make good television and people will come for it. It's almost kind of shocking to look back at some of these older shows. Like, so Black Sails came out this past week.
It did.
I may have mentioned it just once or twice, but I've been shocked when I was writing about it to realize that it released 4 seasons over the course of like 3 years. Yeah. And it does have big ship spectacle things too. So yeah, I hope that, you know, I don't know what lessons networks need to take from Shogun, but I hope that they take them. I really hope FX doesn't try to force through some kind of sequel or something. Like, let them do another book from James Clavell if they want. But
which I would watch, you know, that. I would totally watch another James Clavell book. I mean, quality takes time, as Marjorie Tyrell once said to that religious crazy person. And nice. Julie, I completely agree with you. Yeah, it's not a second screen issue, which is a whole kind of other thing. Like, again, subtitles have been long objected to by some people because you have to take your eyes away. And
that's fair.
I think you can get better at watching them. I think it's almost like a little skill that just not everybody develops. Just, it's fine. We'll move on, but I like what you said about the show kind of use, like, the subtitles being an important part of it because of the gaps in translation. Like, the whole meme that resulted from this one is John Blackthorne ranting about something like, why did Bran become king? It was crazy. He didn't have anything to do. He had the worst story. They said he had the best story. It doesn't make any sense. And they ended like that. And John got to the wall. It's crazy. And then she translates like, the Anjin doesn't like the end of Game of Thrones. Just like really just kind of that was funny. I once saw, like, years ago, I was in a foreign country and I watched the movie Babel, which is about like
language
all
barriers?
These different, yeah, it's about language, but it's about like 4 different stories on different cons, all speaking different languages. And the point of it is how language separates us. And they dubbed everything into Spanish because I was in a foreign country at the time.
Oh, gotcha.
Which, like, well, this this makes no sense. Like the whole point of the movie is undermined if you dub it like this.
Yeah.
Which is not true of every foreign film, obviously, or every film, but there are those things that kind of make the subtitles and language barriers part of the point. And I think Shogun's one of those. All right. I think we should move on. So you have anything else to say about Shogun?
Just if you haven't seen it, consider giving it a watch. I really loved it. Great, great show. Anna Sawai. Someone give her Emmy.
Sawai.
What do we got to talk about next?
Let's stop by Westeros as we enjoy am enjoying to do. House of the Dragon still on track for June 16th. Come on, get excited. It's going to happen. I'm looking forward to that. We also know that they are hard at work on A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Hedge Knight. That's the full title. I still believe they'll probably shorten that. I hope to God they shorten that. We have to write about this stuff. Don't make us do it. I don't even want to know what the acronym is. Which is this prequel to Game of Thrones, but set after House of the Dragon. A tall knight named Sir Duncan the Tall and a diminutive bald child named Aegon Targaryen, a.k.a. Egg, wander Westeros, having adventures. And we're just learning about where they're shooting in June, which includes some notable old Game of Thrones locations. For instance, we have Myra Castle in Northern Ireland, it's all in Northern Ireland, which will stand in for Ashford Castle and parts of Flea Bottom. A lot of the first Duncan Egg novel takes place on Ashford in the Reach. So Verdant Meadows, very nice. And on Game of Thrones, that was the Dreadfort where the Boltons lived. So we're flipping it, making it happier. They're also filming at a pretty place called Glenarm Castle Estate in Northern Ireland. That'll be the Ashford Castle grounds. And they'll film in the Tullymore Forest Park in Northern Ireland, which on the Duncan Egg Show will stand in for the Crownlands, the area around King's Landing. On Game of Thrones, it was where the Starks found their little direwolf puppies. Remember that? We remember that.
Aww.
And it'll be at Titanic Studios, too, because, of course, it will. And by the way, B2, Joe Rogan had an opinion on House of the Dragon. I did not hear about that. Apparently, Joe Rogan said it's bad because all the actors are new.
The main thing you're convincing me of is I don't need to listen to Joe Rogan. Thank you, B2.
How far
down that rabbit hole do we want to go?
Maybe he didn't have all the information. It sounds like he maybe didn't. I'll look that up, though.
Anything Matt
Joe
Smith.
Rogan says about anything is newsworthy. That man is listened to. So maybe I'll look that up later and get the specifics. It is a little odd to hear that, though. Finally, moving on, in addition to A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Hedge Knight, we also got some information from Brian Helgeland, who was a screenwriter who wrote movies, I think, like Man on Fire, a couple others. And he was developing another Game of Thrones prequel show that ended up getting shelved, it sounds like. Julie asks, who is Joe Rogan? Whoa.
You're fine, Julie. You don't even need to know.
Google him. He's a very influential podcaster who... We could talk about him for hours, but we shouldn't. So I'm just going to move on. Google him if you dare. Very, very influential podcaster here in the States. I mean, remember, Drew's in Australia. I don't know if Joe Rogan's international. In any case. This screenwriter, Brian Helgeland, talks about this 10,000 ships Game of Thrones prequel series he was developing, but it got shelved. It was going to be about Nymeria of the Rhoynar. So... many hundreds of years before Game of Thrones, Nymeria's on Essos. She piles her people into a bunch of ships because she tried and failed to fight against the Valyrian Empire of the time with their dragons and their fire and their cruelty and their tyranny and their blood magic, and decides, we gotta go. This place sucks. We're leaving the continent. And they were nomadic wanderers for a while, eventually end up in Dorne. And he just talked about how he really liked the show. He thought it turned out great. The show is going to be about, like, basically Nymeria is Moses and she's leading her people on this nomadic journey through not a desert, but through several oceans. They go on land, they get chased back. He said it would be like, what did he say? It would be like Ray Harryhausen's Sinbad films mixed with The Odyssey, Nymeria's Odysseus. Do you like Ray Harryhausen or do you like The Odyssey or do you like both?
All of it. What? I like all of that, Dan. But no, I grew up on the Ray Harryhausen Sinbad movies. They were some of my first introduction to this type of genre fare, we'll say, like Sinbad's Seven Voyages and I don't remember the name of the other two, but yeah, they have like stop motion animation creatures. They're old movies, but he's, you know, a legend of that type of creature film from the early like 60s, I want to say 60s, and like Clash of the Titans. That was another one of his. So Nymeria, that you pointed out the Ray Harryhausen thing, because when I read that, I was like, ah, damn you, HBO, for taking this away. I really wanted this. And I do think this would have been an interesting show. So like Nymeria lived in Essos. There was a big battle with Valyria, and then she basically is the one ruler of the Roine who decides to leave. The other ones stay and they get toasted, if I remember right. This is all in a world of ice and fire, which is all they had to draw from. There's really not a whole lot of information. But yeah, Nymeria goes. So some things we would have seen in this if they had made this show. So Thorios, maybe I'm saying that wrong. The southern continent that never features in any other Game of Thrones things. Nymeria goes there. And then we would have seen early Dorne. And it's kind of like they have a flotilla of 10,000 ships, which is the name of the series. And each time they land somewhere, they get driven back out to sea, basically, because there are diseases or slavers or whatever reason, and they lose people and they lose ships along the way. It sounds like it would have been interesting. I'm also not super surprised they might have opted not to do this, just because...
It's not now.
Yeah, they could come back to this one at any point. You know, it's not like they're going to have that much more or less to work with in the future. Because this is a historical thing in George R. R. Martin's world. He's not writing a Nymeria book or anything like that. But yeah, so it is sad to me that this was shelved for now, but I think it makes sense. It's cool to hear a little bit more about it. And also, obviously, this is the Nymeria that Arya Stark's direwolf is named after. Just to keep tabs on that, too.
Indeed it is. By the way, I looked it up. Joe Rogan was mad about the actors changing halfway through the first season of House of the Dragon. Although I just looked it up. I don't know how he missed this back in the day. He was mad, like, exactly around the time that it happened, like, that it switched. He used some profanity. He called some folks idiots. But that's the problem with Joe Rogan, isn't it? Just that he tends to kind of not think through his takes that much, just kind of spouts off. And because he has so many passionate followers, it becomes news. Even though, like, I remember that there were quite a few folks who didn't like the switchover. Sure. And then they embraced it and Emma Darcy became the breakout star of the season and it all worked out. But that if I have a critique of Joe Rogan, I'm completely a promoter of nothing. It's that he seems to have kind of underthought takes and just says it without thinking it through. And then that has an outsized reach because of his giant audience.
Yeah,
because the House of the Dragon switchover worked out pretty well. But you have to like let it bake for a minute and think about it before you can really weigh in like that.
Yes, your critical television watching brain did not have the troubles with it. I agree. I mean, I agree with what you said. I think that's probably the appeal for a lot of people of Joe Rogan, is that he's shooting from the hip, as they say. But it also does lead to some maybe half-baked takes. I have opinions. I don't need to necessarily share all of them. But
yeah, I did not think we talked about this today.
If you
did.
Don't like Ewan Mitchell as Aemon Targaryen, I have to ask what show you were watching. That's my take.
All right. As Fantasy Fan says, negativity draws in views. Does it ever? I mean, look, we work in this industry. Yeah, if negativity draws in views, people love feeling bad. Speaking of that, yeah, what are we hating?
What
are we hating watching nowadays? What are we watching? What don't we like? And will you do that with us? Somebody said earlier that Fallout is their favorite show of 2024 so far. There's been some good TV, by the way, in
there
like
has.
4 months into 2024. Three Body Problem, I really liked a lot.
That was
the
great.
Fallout show I'm still watching is fantastic.
Yeah.
Shogun, I think,
it?
Is. Oh, yeah, totally. Of course I am. Cool. Shogun is terrific, and now it's over. So kudos 2024 so far. Good on you. And there's some other big stuff coming up. I think tomorrow we got Dead Boy Detectives, which is kind of a Neil Gaiman adjacent, sort of kind of YA skewing goth boy detective show that I may or may not watch. I am interested in the second season of Interview with the Vampire coming out on May 12th because I loved the first season. Thought it was real dark, dripping in atmosphere. I want to see more of that very, very badly. I am interested in the new season of Doctor Who, May 10th. I am an on and off Who person, and this might be an on year because a lot of buzz about it. People are talking about this one like they haven't about the show in a while. I might check that out. And then I will, of course, be watching, not really fantasy or sci-fi, but the third season of Hacks comes into May, H on the Max on May 2nd. It's a great sitcom. I'm watching that as well. Daniel, anything you're watching?
Nice.
Or anything anyone out there you're watching or looking forward to, sound off in the comments.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Fallout. I've seen Fallout. I want to say I'm partway into my third watch of it right now. So I've been really, really enjoying it. We are enormous Fallout fans in our household. My wife has played an insane amount of them. I've been playing them for years. So fun thing with Fallout. The games are getting like a huge boom from this, which we kind of expected, but Fallout 4 has like sold 4,000% more, like some insane number more copies since the show dropped in Europe. And they're actually patching in new stuff tomorrow into Fallout 4, which is like a years old game at this point. But they're adding some stuff about the Enclave, which is a faction that didn't appear in that one that was in the older games that shows up in the show. So that's something I'm looking forward to. But in terms of television, aside from Fallout and aside from Shogun, which I just finished, I am watching the final season of Succession. Finally.
Oh, kick in.
It's great so far. You know, stuff's going on with Pierce. The Roys are, there's Pierce a schism says. Forming between the Roy siblings. Bubo says, are you a fan of Fallout 1 to 2 or 3 to 4? To that I say, I don't deal in these hard splits. I like them all. I like New Vegas. I like Fallout 2. I like Fallout 1.
How magnanimous of you.
I think the fandom, it's so funny to me how everyone is opinionated about which one of these games they think is best. And since the show has come out, it's been a lot of people being like, this is so great, this show. And then let me use that as an excuse to shit on every other game aside from the one that's my favorite. I like them all. I'm not too biased. But so aside from Succession, aside from Fallout, aside from Shogun, you're right. It's a lot of TV this year. It's a great year for TV thus far. but not great TV. I watched Rebel Moon Part 2. The Scargiver, which is the new Zack Snyder movie that's on Netflix. Yes, and it is deserving of the gavel.
Doing slow-mo.
Oh, yeah. That was better slow-mo than some of the slow-mo in the movie. Yeah, so I didn't love Rebel Moon. Didn't love is like an understatement. I thought it was pretty bad. I can understand why some people enjoy watching it. I think it's an entertaining movie. I watched it with a large amount of alcohol, and I think that is the ideal way to watch Rebel Moon. Because Bubo says it's a real disaster, and it is a little nonsensical. This is one of those instances where they split it into two movies to try and milk the most they could out of it, and the pacing was just completely blown to hell because of that. So, like, the first part had character development, the second part picks up right where things left off, and as a result, like, people are like making out like 10 minutes into the movie, and there's like no
Fun.
chemistry, and they didn't build any other thing about the relationship. There, people are dying. It really, the split didn't really work for me. And I think the first movie felt more climactic, even though this is supposed to be like the big battle they were all preparing for. Like,
Right.
the first movie felt like it had more of an actual climax to it than this. And also, I draw issue with the fact that this is a space age conflict. It's an intergalactic kingdom, but they're willing to go to war because they just really need the grain from this one planet.
You
And
gotta
it's super.
eat. Oh.
Well,
Sorry.
sure, but
Sorry.
are they just eating bread? Like, they must be eating other stuff in this space empire so that they're not just wholly reliant on grain. So there's all these sorts of little things that just like didn't completely make sense. And it's like it's running on vibes. Rebel Moon. Rebel Moon is just a vibes first movie. The plot's
Gotcha.
kind of all over the place. The characters are all over the place. The actors did the best they could with what they had. I think
Most do.
I forget her name, who plays the main character, the Scar Giver, Aeneas. She's awesome. I think she did great. But yeah, there's kind of this feeling that, like, in the first movie too, the first movie was kind of like Zack Snyder's tour through like historical milieus a little bit, where like they went to a different planet and each planet was just like, this one will be like an Asian themed cyberpunk planet. This one is a gladiator themed planet. Like, they were all very recognizably like Earth milieus just in space. So there's all sorts of
Sure,
stuff.
sure.
There's all sorts of stuff like that where I'm just like, Bubo says he's a bad cinematographer, and we can debate that. Some people like Zack Snyder style, some don't. But I think Rebel Moon is a really good example of the danger of having someone in charge of story and in charge of also making sure it all looks cool. Because I think Zack Snyder very clearly had ideas about what would make it all look cool, and the story almost feels like an afterthought in a lot of ways. The costuming is also just all over the place. I don't want to hate on Rebel Moon too long because,
It's too late.
net negativity. Oh yeah, the blurred background. There you go. Producer Richard was asking about that just before the show. So yes, blurred backgrounds in every single frame, slow motion wheat harvesting, slow motion stabbings. It's a movie that happened, and we may be getting like four more of them. So
I mean,
buckle in,
maybe
people.
with the response it's gotten, I don't know, man. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I know it's being watched, but I feel like it might have a steep drop off. Most of our commenters obviously seem to agree with you. Didn't do it for
Yeah.
Nicole, didn't do it for B2. Here's a question. Is Zack Snyder our most polarizing popular filmmaker working today?
Oh. That's, you know what? I don't know if that's hard, man. I'm struggling to think of other really polarizing ones, but he'd probably be up there. I think because there's such
Is up
a
there.
rabid like fan following for
Yeah.
him. It's almost similar to like the way that some of these game fandoms become super like hyper polarized. I feel like he's kind of got a hyper polarized fandom where he's got people who will like go to the battle lines defending that he is the best thing since sliced bread, which they make on veldt, by the way, because they harvest grain. And then other people who just don't
Got
like
bread
the
that got knives.
style. I always liked Zack Snyder, but I have to say, the more I hear from him lately, and the more of his recent movies I see, the less I like him. And I think that this Rebel Moon, it's interesting because originally this was just like his Star Wars movie that got rejected. He was going to make it for
Yes.
Netflix. And like, I did not think that, so they split this one movie into two, which will have director's cuts eventually because Netflix knows Snyder fans want the director's cut. So they intentionally did it by releasing crappy half-baked versions of the movies first so that they can later release director's cuts with like the additional information that might have made it make sense the first time. But the thing that really bugged me is that Rebel Moon Part 2 doesn't really end on a satisfying complete note. It's like the battle happens and then they end it. And it's like, again, Rebel Moon Part 1 like had a bigger ending. So I don't understand the thought process at all. So yeah, Rebel Moon,
the industry,
watch it if you want to get very wasted drinking every time there's slow motion. That's all I'll say for it.
The industry is still reckoning very much with does everything need to be a cinematic universe or
yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
This feels like a symptom of that. I mean, with Zack Snyder also, they gave him like a cinematic universe to do before, and it famously didn't work out all that well. The DC cinematic universe. So it's a little odd that he was able to convince Netflix to give him this much money to do this again. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it will catch on in a huge way, but it seems like folk aren't enjoying this very much. And I predict a drop off in viewing. And I think Rebel Moon Part 7 might never materialize, but
yeah,
we'll see what happens in the future. There have been some good comments, but you guys are commenting really good today. There's a lot. So I can't go back and see some of the older ones, but whatever they were, I loved them and I love you. And I hope you keep watching and commenting and subscribing and everything you can do to help us here at winterscoming.net. Take the black light.
Very nice.
Daniel, should we move on to the WIC News lightning round where we each give our 20-second opinions on news of the day we didn't have time to get to and the main body of the show?
We probably should, right?
You know what?
Or we could just keep talking about Rebel Moon, the new cult classic. Maybe not the movie we needed, but maybe the movie we deserve. Let's lightning.
Let's do it. Okay. Why don't you ask? These aren't in order, but I think you should ask me first. I think that's how it's going to go.
Okay. So the new trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine has more curse words than in the entire rest of the MCU.
Yeah. It also set some viewership records. I mean, this is the Marvel turnaround. I predict they're going to come back. I think they're getting things under control. I think they're stopping the complete glut of stuff and they're going to make some huge event movies like this. I see a lot of hype for this. I'll probably see this and I predict a huge hit for them. And if they keep it up, hits in the future, they can do this. They can do it. They can make a comeback, but they got to be careful. Okay. Daniel, since you watched the show and I didn't yet, although I really want to, I'm going to ask you this one. The second season of Severance on Apple TV Plus has finished filming and it will be coming to Apple TV Plus later this year. Are you jazzed?
I'm super jazzed. I really enjoyed Severance. It's one of those shows where you can watch it and maybe not like be binge watching and going back to watch it over and over, but it's going to give you a lot to think about long after you finish watching it. Show where people partition their minds so that their at work self doesn't remember their home life. Their home self doesn't know what they do at work. And then things get sci-fi weird from there. And yeah, season 2 coming out later this year. Very exciting. I'm not super familiar with this one, so I want to hear your thoughts on it. So Park Chan-wook is producing an Old Boy TV show. What is that?
Yeah, Park Chan-wook has been a South Korean director. He's kind of like a precursor to the Boom John Ho's and Parasites and like Squid Games, like all the big South Korean like invasion that we've had culturally the past couple of years. Old Boy is a really influential movie from the early 2000s, an action movie. There's a famous scene where a guy like kills 80 folk in a hallway with a hammer. It was very big at the time. I'm looking forward to it. And may the South Korean invasion continue. Daniel, I like this one. You know what? I'm going to go and ask you this because I feel like you have opinions on this.
All right. I'll ask you that one. We can swippity swap.
Daniel, Zack Snyder, going back to this, has plans for his Rebel Moon trilogy to last for 6 movies. I put this in here before I knew you want to talk about Rebel Moon in the body of the show. What do you think?
I think that a trilogy is not 6 movies. And I think as long as we think that a trilogy is six movies, we're going to have issues making a good trilogy. And also,
I think
I'm
it
sorry.
Says it all.
I'm sorry to everyone. I hope
and you're
we...
apparently like trying to guard yourself from falling rocks.
I am. Yes. The falling rocks of Zack Snyder fans that okay. they're throwing at me. Okay. So yeah, I don't know the deets of this. So I'm glad you swapped these because this is interesting. So Star Wars Andor creator Tony Gilroy says season two of Andor is the most, quote, important, end quote, thing he's ever done.
Important is a word that can mean many things. It's important because it's the most like eyeballs on the thing. It's a Star Wars branding. I am still very impressed that a Star Wars TV show set in the galaxy far, far away managed to have opinions on revolutions, prisons, and like real world things. I can actually believe that's true, like what he's saying, which is kind of crazy for a Star Wars thing. So bring it on. Yeah. Hey, Daniel. Look at this picture. Yes. It's noted actor and Miley Cyrus ex-boyfriend Liam Hemsworth reading scripts for The Witcher Season 4 with other cast members. He is, of course, replacing Henry Cavill as Geralt of Rivia.
Yes. Yeah, so here he is with Anya Shalatra, who plays Yennefer, and Joey Beatty, who plays Yaskier. It's exciting to see that The Witcher season four is moving along. They are finishing with season five. I've seen a lot of really lame headlines like The Witcher got canceled. It didn't get canceled. Whatever. This is just where the story ends. We've been expecting five seasons for years now. So yeah, curious to see what happens there. But speaking of The Witcher and maybe things that actually did get canceled, The Witcher spinoff The Rats, that is either dead or it's getting repurposed as flashback episodes or just flashbacks in the main Witcher show.
Yeah, they're going to have the Witcher spinoff show about like a character we don't know doing Robin Hoodie, but make it murder kind of things. Bad idea. Like Netflix loves these cinematic universes. Rebel Moon, Army of the Dead, The Witcher just goes from zero to cinematic universe so quickly. And it's not a great idea. And it's probably for the best that, just make one good show, and if people love it, then like you can focus on it later. That's my opinion. Is it just me or is okay? Never mind.
what was that?
Now I feel like this is going very quickly. I don't feel like it's 20 seconds. I feel it's more like
it's
six.
A quick 20 seconds.
Maybe
at
it's
best.
Just in my head, and I don't want to complain about our wonderful production because that's psychotic. All right, Daniel. Final. Thing, a show is near and dear to your heart. Yes. Seth MacFarlane, noted man behind such shows as Family Guy and The Orville, gives an update on the long in gestation fourth season of the Star Trek homage, The Orville. He just says, there will be more. Do you believe him?
Yeah, I do believe him. I don't know that there will be more of an Orville television show. I really, really hope that there will be. But so this comes from an interview where basically he said the Orville was a passion project. I say was, but I don't really mean was because there will be more. So he's also written like a novel in the Orville world. So my impression is one way or another, he wants to do more Orville. I hope it ends up being a show, though, because they really had something special, I think, with that show.
I didn't think about that. You're probably right. Oh, you probably are right to like write a little comic or something. It's too bad. But yeah. Maybe, yeah, we'll see.
Limited two-issue comic run wrapping up long-standing plot lines. Please don't do that. Seth
Leo does not believe him, which I agree is a good show.
Yeah.
We'll keep you updated. We'll keep you updated on so many things, both here on Take the Black, which we stream every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, 3 on the East Coast, and noon up at California A, and 1 on the mountains if you live up there. And over on winterscoming.net, we write about this kind of stuff all the time. Please, if you're not busy, give us a subscribe, give us a like. I'd ask you to comment, but I know you're already doing that. Love you guys. Thank you for that. Or download us in podcast form at iTunes, YouTube Music, wherever podcasts are available. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you next week.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.